It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell. Today we're continuing the conversation about the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, and the impact on media. Joining me today by phone is Robert Ray, a correspondent with Al Jazeera America. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Okay. So how long have you been in Ferguson on this story?
I've been here for about 5 days now at this point. So not as long as some, but enough time to get a real feel for what's happening here.
Okay. Well, can you tell me what you feel is going on?
Sure. Basically, you know, obviously this all started with the killing of Michael Brown, but there's a deep-seated distrust of police. There's economic instability here, and you know there's poverty, and people are upset, and I think they're at a boiling point, a tipping point, and I believe that Michael Brown's death has started a new wave of thinking here in this community and even in the St. Louis region, and I think it's kind of brought out some issues that America is going to have to talk about again.
Are you surprised that it's broken so big?
I'm not. You know, I travel a lot around the country on stories, and you know, I see a lot of people that need a lot of help, and I'm not surprised. You know, this is just sometimes it just takes one thing to open a discussion up and a canister of a lot of things that people, you know, are not talking about. So I'm not genuinely surprised at all.
Okay. Is there anything in particular about this story that concerns you?
Yeah. I am concerned about the militarization of the police. You know, being out there on the ground and seeing, you know, AR-15s and shotguns pointed at not only demonstrators but media when things get a little tempered. I don't feel that it was ever at that point to warrant guns being drawn into someone's face. To me, that's just, it's too much. It's not a war zone. Even though some media have compared it to, you know, a chaotic war zone, it's simply not even close. And that is irresponsible for some of the media to even say that that's a war zone. Clearly, they haven't been to a war zone, if that's what they're saying.
So what is your observation about how the media is being treated?
You know, I think some of the media has taken this overboard. They're being a little bit Hollywoodish about it. They're taking some of the things that are happening out there and blowing it up a little bit out of proportion. And I think that's inappropriate. I think there needs to be an even temper out there and an even beat, and we need to tell things the way they are. You know, to say that it is chaos on the street is I think a little bit over the top. To say that it is like a war zone, not really appropriate. It's not a war zone. So I think that some of the protesters have accepted the media with open arms. Others think that the media is inciting this a little bit. I think both those opinions are accurate. And as far as what the police think, I don't know. The police haven't, you know, the police won't talk to you out there. Captain Ron Johnson, every once in a while, who's the head of the Highway Patrol, took over the situation, walks out there every once in a while. You know, he's not really talking to the media in that kind of candor.
Okay. And now there was something that was posted a few days ago, an Al Jazeera crew, they experienced some gas. They left their cameras and lights behind. Can you sort of tell us about what happened there?
Sure. Yeah, we had our correspondent Usher Qureshi and Marla Chakowski, producer, and Sam Winslet, photographer. They were actually not even in the pocket that was where the demonstrators were. They were a few blocks off, and they were trying to do a live report, an in-depth report. They kind of wanted to get out of the scene with all the protesters. And there was police officers and a tactical unit about, from their description, about 50 or 60 feet away from them. And they had their camera lights up, and they were about to do a live report. Clearly, they look like a TV crew. I mean, it's just, if it walks like a duck, it is a duck. Mm-hmm. And they were ready to go. And I guess one of the police officers came on and asked them to disperse, and our producer said, you know, we're media, we're about to do a live shot. It was very calm. The next thing you know, they had rubber bullets and tear gas canisters coming their way. And The police, I just don't know how the police didn't realize that they were media. You see three lights, you see a guy standing in front of a camera. They have not heard from the Ferguson Police Department on that, as far as what happened. They've not heard anything, and there's a lot of frustration and because of that. I mean, I talked to our producer the other day, and she's surprised that the police have not reached out to them and apologized and said, look, it was a big mistake. So we really don't even know what happened at this point on their end.
Yeah, I saw that they had some. I think one of the other news crews that happened to be in the area had posted some video of it sort of unfolding. And yep. When they say gas and bullets and stuff, you sort of get the impression, you guys must have been like right there on the quote unquote on the line. But right. In actuality, it was clear that you were apart from what was going on, and the gas wasn't just like something that sort of drifted to where you're at. It was like right there.
It was. Propelled toward them, they were not on the front line at all. Not even close, blocks away. So it's just a nonsensical situation that occurred. And they can't get answers. That's the thing as to why the Ferguson Police Department did that. They're not answering, which is even more perplexing.
So you didn't think that was some sort of intimidation or maybe just some sort of mistake? Or do you have any impression of what that might have been?
None of us know. And talking to to my three colleagues out there about it, they're not sure either at this point. To speculate on it, I don't know, and neither do they. We're just not sure. I mean, I'm sure that in the coming weeks we'll probably find out a little bit more. Hopefully, Ferguson Police Department decides to answer the questions that Al Jazeera America has for them. But it's interesting about this. Actually, yesterday on Thursday, all calls to the Ferguson Police Department were being directed toward a PR company in St. Louis as of yesterday. But listen to this. So they said that in the morning. But then later in the day, if you called that PR company, the PR company said, yeah, that was this morning, and we're now not representing the Ferguson Police Department. So now, the PR company that was supposedly representing them is not representing them now. And now, if you call the Ferguson Police Department, no one will even answer. So it's just I understand that they're not prepared for national media to come in, but sometimes just common sense would be appropriate. And I feel like that's lacking here.
So as a journalist in the field in America. What does it make you feel when, some of your colleagues are having rubber bullets shot at them or there's gas being propelled at them?
Well, yeah, it's disturbing. It's unnecessary. And it makes me feel like there are a lot of people out there in positions where they just want a lot of power. And that's upsetting. They put on the tactical gear and they feel like that's... that's their right to do whatever they like. I equate it to if you're sitting in gridlock traffic and somebody cuts you off, a lot of people will express themselves differently in cars, with road rage.
Right.
And then if they were to get out of their vehicle, then it would be a different story. They'd be much more calm. They feel like the vehicle is their safety net, their catalyst to do whatever they want. I feel like there's a little bit of that with some police officers out there. I think society has just become perhaps a little bit trigger happy, and when I see journalists taking it like that, it's upsetting. I don't like it, and we have the right to report and document. And when we're not able to do that, we got serious problems.
So, do you feel there's there's any particular impact on now that you've had this happen, your colleagues have had this happen? Is this affecting your reporting in any way?
Yeah, a little bit. I can tell you, like last night was very peaceful, but there was one moment where two of the demonstrators were handcuffed and they were taken down by where these huge armored vehicles are, and I actually went over there. I just got done with a live report, and I went over there to just kind of assess what's happening. And immediately, I had three or four guys in full body armor suits and guns sort of build a wall so that I couldn't see. One guy started to shine a very very intense flashlight in my eyes so that I couldn't see what was happening. And I said, look, you know, I'm a correspondent for Al Jazeera America. I'm just trying to see, assess this so we can report this fairly. And I'm not jumping to any conclusions. I just want to see why they're being detained, why you guys are putting cuffs on them. And, you know, the one gentleman got agitated. He's like, move, get back, go. I'm like, sir, I just want to know what's happening so that I can report this. Go, you know. And, you know, it's just there's just a lack of transparency and respect out there. I mean, I'm not armed. I didn't even have a microphone on me. You know, and all I'm doing is asking questions so that I can report this accurately. And yet, you know, I'm being treated as if I'm walking up with an AR-15. It's unbelievable.
So, what is Al Jazeera telling you, telling its correspondents in the field about how to behave and how to do their job?
Yeah. Well, we are in the mindset that, you know, we just report what we see. We're not going to speculate out there. We are not going to try to inflame the situation. We just want to know exactly what's happening and give it unbiased, truly. I know we've heard that before. I know a lot of people will say that. But we're actually doing what we're saying. So that's what our management is telling us to do. And frankly, they don't even need to tell us that because, you know, they hired the right people. They hired serious journalists. We're not going to go out there and try to, you know, exploit the situation for TV ratings. It's just not what we do. We are boots on the ground, and we're watching it as closely as we can, and we are showing it exactly the way it's happening, and I'm saying it exactly the way it's happening. If it, for example, like last night, there was just not a lot of people out there. It was peaceful. I'm not going to get out there and say, you know, there's hundreds of people and boy, things are chaotic. No, that's not me. I got on air and I said, you know, there are about 100 people out here. It's very peaceful. There are very few police. There's no incidents. To be honest with you, there's not a lot to report. And that's the truth. It's not sexy, but boy, it's true.
Yeah, well, that's what you're supposed to be there doing,
yep.
not creating news, as it were. You know, there are many people who try to just boil it. Well, what's the, you know, the story is really about the shooting, but as we've seen events sort of unfold, they're about a lot of different things.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where the reporting is at, and the reporting seems to be following that. What are your thoughts about how the story sort of developed from a shooting and a public's reaction and to where it is now?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it started with Michael Brown being shot, 18-year-old, being shot by a 28-year-old white officer. But I think what has happened is, you know, there are a lot of problems in Ferguson, Missouri. And Ferguson, Missouri, I think, is not a town that is unique. I think there's a lot of towns like that across the country. And I think that from being on the street and talking to a lot of the young African-Americans and the older ones as well, that are out there, you know, they really do feel that the African American community doesn't have the opportunity that they should have. They feel oppressed. They feel that the police, no matter what, I've had so many people tell me the story. You know, if I'm just walking down the street, you know, I'm heading somewhere, maybe to work. There are times when the police will pull me over and, you know, ask me for ID, ask me where I'm going. So I think that I think the black community is suffering on a lot of levels. You know, I think especially here, there's economic instability. There is grief and anger toward the fact that there's no opportunity. And, you know, it's just like it's a pattern of problems that a lot of them feel that they just can't get out of. And if you talk to some of the older people out there, you know, women and men in their 60s and 70s that have been out there trying to calm down the young people, you know, they'll just say, you know, it's not easy being black in this country, that they feel that they're being profiled. Then, you know, they just don't have the opportunity that others do. So I think this has just opened up sort of a can of worms, so to speak. As one person said, it's a toxic soup going on, and not only Ferguson, but across the country.
So have you ever seen a story like this in your experience?
Trayvon Martin situation was similar, but not to this level. It's very different circumstances. you know, I've done a lot of stories on poverty in America, mm-hmm. and topics like this have come up a lot. The fact that there is, you know, from people that we've interviewed, the fact that there's no opportunity, the fact that the police treat them improperly. But no, I can't say that in this country I've seen anything explode like this as far as race relations. You know, recently, clearly in the 60s, I wasn't around then, but, you know, obviously it happened a lot. But I think this is something that will likely have an effect in the months to come and perhaps even years. I think it unfortunately it takes events sometimes to start a dialogue.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. We just talked to Alexander Howard about, he had written a story for Tech Republic about, you know, his impressions of what was going on in Missouri. And one of the things he said, you know, he referenced the 1960s of the civil rights movement as well. You know, sometimes you need to have something, you know, put in your face in order for change to happen and to catch people's attention. And I think this seems to have caught a lot of people's attention. Have you gotten much reaction from your audience, from people who are following you on TV or on video?
I mean, our Twitter is pretty hot right now. I mean, a lot of people are you know, reacting, you know, well to Al Jazeera America, you know, commending us on not exploiting the situation, you know, like some other networks have been doing. And I'm not trying to be antagonistic toward other networks, but, you know, I am standing out there, and I do hear and see what some of the other networks are doing. And you know, the thing that bothers me the most is to have reporters, seasoned reporters, compare this to a war zone. Or I heard one reporter say it's like Bagram, like Kabul. I mean, that's just, I just don't know how you can legitimately think like that and say that on television. It's reprehensible to me. This is an American city, a suburb of St. Louis. This is not like Baghdad or Bagram Air Base or anything close to a hostile environment in a war zone. And that's the one thing that I think people are happy that Al Jazeera America is keeping a temper on that. And that's what we do in general. That is what the network does. We're going to keep that tempo.
Yeah, and it's not like that invective is going to make it, you know, any more of an important story or shocking in and of itself. I think there seems to be enough going on there without you having to compare it to a war zone or, you know, combat or something like that.
Exactly.
So, you know, looking at this, you know, taking this story and looking at the way the media covers race, economic disparity in other communities, things, what would you say to reporters about telling these types of stories?
I think the best advice that I would give anyone out there is let the people talk. Let them tell the story. You know, use an academic in a story, someone who actually has studied and has numbers, but ultimately let the people discuss. Let have an open dialogue, whether you're doing TV, radio, or print. I don't twist the words. And, you know, the thing is that most people in the media don't know what it's like to be in those situations, those impoverished situations. Most of us live a fairly decent life. So we kind of parachute into these situations. And that's sometimes unfair to the reporting of people's lives. But this is one of those things where we need to take caution, and we need to make sure that, you know, we're just allowing the people to talk, and then we can edit it together, of course, so you know, things make sense in the story, but not take things out of context at all. That's my advice.
So is there, you know, looking back the 5 days that you've been there, is there any one thing that sort of stands out to you to either sort of describes a story or describes the way that you guys have been telling it?
Yeah, there, you know, the one thing to me and the one thing that continues to come up every single day is that there's no opportunity from people on the ground. The demonstrators, whether the demonstrator is 15 years old or whether the demonstrator is 75, there's no opportunity. That continues to be brought up. Another interesting thing is that this happened yesterday, and this sort of blew my mind. I had a couple people say to me, compare the black community to Native Americans and being put onto reservations. And I had literally three people say that to me. And they're talking about like low-income housing, neighborhoods where there's a lot of liquor stores, things like that. And it made me kind of scratch my head on that and do a deeper look. And we did a story on that last night about how, you know, the segregation, you know, it's many times impoverished African Americans live in the same pockets in cities, in public housing, with liquor stores around, with all the same. And in a sense, you know, it's not an official reservation, but if you look at it and you listen to what these people are saying, they do have a point. It's sort of a clustering of people that have put together and have been, I guess from their perspective, controlled by a police force. And it's a staggering thought when you consider it.
And a police force that one of the other stories that comes out, a police force is doesn't reflect them in the diversity of their makeup.
Yeah, exactly. There's three African Americans on the force of over 50 in Ferguson, and the city is predominantly African American, and it's just it's amazing. I mean, I heard the mayor of Ferguson the other day say that he didn't think that there was a race problem in his town, and I also saw that mayor get into a vehicle and get in the back seat, and he had a driver. There's 21,000 people there. Why would a mayor have a driver like that? I mean, this is a guy, in my humble opinion, should be on the streets and trying to figure out what's wrong with this town and not eating cake and steak while it's all happening.
No, America has a racial problem. If people don't quite realize that, and events like this are the things that stick out and remind us of that. And something that someday we're going to need to reckon with and to deal with. The Al Jazeera story, where do you see it going? And sort of wrapping up here, where do you see it? Where
sure.
do you see your work going at this point?
Yeah. Sure. Well, we are here throughout the weekend and into next week. We're going to stay for Michael Brown's funeral. We're going to monitor events over the weekend. We'll have a team here all the way through next week. I'm going to leave on Tuesday, but I will be back. I think what we're going to do is we're going to expand this. We're going to start looking at other cities across the country, not just big cities, but small areas as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to start to look at where race relations are, how the police are acting, whites, blacks, Asians, Latinos are interacting, where everybody kind of lives. We're going to look at some segregation issues across the country, and then we're going to do it hard, and we're going to do it fairly, and we're going to make sure again that the people's voice is heard, and it's not just some correspondent like me or another that is blabbing away and giving people things that they don't really care about. We want to make sure that the story is about what's actually happening, and not some made up baloney that other networks do for ratings.
Yeah, and sometimes with stories this complex, the idea is you go to this event, you super cover this event, and then you never really address those issues again. And so the importance is to keep that going. And Ferguson's having this issue. Well, what about my hometown? What about the capital of the state or whatever? These stories are universal. These stories are part of America. How can we go out and tell these stories and find these stories and keep this alive so that we can sort of deal with this?
Exactly. The Ferguson story is happening all over the country. It just hasn't been, there hasn't been a spotlight on by the media put on it, but it's happening everywhere. And the thing is if we don't cover this all over the country, if we don't actually look into it, how can the country get better? And that is the most important thing that the media can do. Politicians can try to make the country be better, and certainly some of them have that intention, but they sometimes are isolated in the bubble of bureaucracy, and they have their hands tied. But what we can do in the media is go out there and show and listen and tell the stories of real people, so that America's eyes can open up better and we can become a better country. I truly believe that.
Okay. Well, I have nothing to add to that. I think that says plenty. Thanks for spending a little time with me talking about this story. This is incredibly interesting and fascinating.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.